Good morning. So I don't have any financial disclosures. This study was funded by the University of Kentucky's Center for the Program on Hunger, and that's part of an initiative through USDA to help eliminate hunger. I do have an agenda, though. I want to tell you I'm the chair of your food and nutrition section, and there's something really important you can do to help ensure food security today. If you're from Michigan, Mississippi, Minnesota, or Oklahoma, I need you to call your conferee because they're talking today about how much SNAP's going to get cut and how much SNAP ed's going to get cut. So if people from those states, if you know somebody in those states, we need to get some calls in, some messages today to help ensure food security. I'm part of a center at the University of South Carolina. You can learn more about our center and all the kinds of work we do around food security and community food security at the center. We'd love to have you come visit. We have a symposium every March. Today I'm talking about one of our center studies, the Midlands Family Study. We have a number of collaborators, some of them in the room. I'd be glad to introduce you in a number of other presentations that are part of this study. This study is designed to help us understand the difference between a family experiencing what I'm going to call child hunger, what USDA currently calls very low food security in children. So on the 18-item household food security scale, these are families that are affirming 5 of the 8 child hunger questions or more. So these are families in the most severe condition of food insecurity. It's really hard to say that your kid went without food for a whole day, for instance. So there are about 1 million families in the United States that are affirming those questions according to our estimates. The bad news is we don't have enough data in any of our big data sets to really understand why. And so we have some demographic information about small numbers of people in large data sets. So this study was designed to help us recruit enough families and compare them to food insecure and food secure families to better understand the risk factors for child hunger. I'm going to only be talking today about the sample of people that come from the urban area of Richland County out of these 8 counties. We're working on the main paper right now, which includes both the rural and urban sample. And also today, I'm only going to be making comparisons between food insecure families in that urban area and the very low food secure in children or child hunger families. So to get all of the people into our study, we developed a sampling frame of food system stakeholders, grocery stores that accept SNAP, for instance, emergency food providers, restaurants that target with kids eat free menus, food assistance programs. We randomly selected sites. We ended up recruiting families into our study from about 218 of those 1,600 sites. We allowed people to invite others into our study. We're hoping to have a respondent-driven sampling frame, but we didn't. The tree branches didn't go out that far. So if someone recruited a person into a study, usually we only got maybe 2 more recruits from that person. So 75% of our sample came from us directly recruiting them at one of these sites. So the overall sample, you'll see that the food insecure sample, about half of them are from an urban area, and about 70% of our very low food secure in children or child hunger families are from the urban area. This is out of our whole sample. Demographically, the families experiencing child hunger are fairly similar to the food insecure families. Slightly more children, less education overall. So we use a stress and resilience framework to better understand what's happening in households where they're dealing with very low food security in children or child hunger. And so we looked at the demands that families face, both social and economic demands. We looked at what kinds of assets they have, both social and economic assets, and kind of how they make sense of all of that. So today I'm going to be talking about the demands and assets that families are dealing with. So one of our first theories is that, you know, families that are dealing with child hunger are probably going through a lot of other stuff, right? And so the negative life events here, this is a scale of 52 different things that we ask families about: divorce, death, losing a car or a home, those kinds of things. And then they also rated how bad each one of those events were. So these scores can either represent having many bad things happen to you over the last 3 years, or that one of those things was very, very, had a very, very negative impact on your life at the time. So we see that the child hunger families had significantly more bad things happen or something very bad happen in their life compared to the food insecure urban families. Perceived stress from that was the exact same in the two groups. The chaos scale, this is a set of 12 questions that ask families questions like, my house is a zoo, I can't find things when I need them, the phone is always ringing. And so the very low food secure families said that they have more chaos going on in their house. The bills were not significantly different, but you can see that on average, even though they're not significantly different, there's kind of a trend toward the very low food secure families having less expenses. The homelessness between the food insecure and the child hunger families was similar. You can see that it's high. We used 5 questions to measure homelessness, so it includes staying with family or friends because you didn't have your own home. We think it's really important to understand that as part of homelessness. And when you only look at things like living in a park or a trailer or a hotel because you don't have your own home, this rate drops to around 5% in both groups. And you can see that, you know, more than 40% of both groups of families have dealt with domestic violence of some kind in the past. The assets that families have to deal with all of those demands that I'm going to show you here, are they working and how much are they making? What kinds of SNAP benefits do they have and summer feeding participation? And then who do they have around them to help with when things are going wrong? So about 60% of our food insecure families reported having some kind of job, temporary or permanent. We have a lot of job cycling in this population, and 55% of our very low food secure families, but those rates are not significantly different in the two families. But you can see that very low food secure families are making a lot less money, $531 a month compared to $725 a month for the food insecure families. SNAP benefits, interestingly enough, are on average lower in the very low food secure families. They're making less money, they have similar numbers of children, they're dealing with a lot more demands, and they're less likely to have a job, so why would they be getting less SNAP dollars? That's not intuitive. Social support, our very low food secure families in this urban area are reporting that they have slightly less access to family social support if things go wrong. And they have significantly lower summer feeding participation. I didn't start here, but so in this bivariate analysis, summer feeding participation rates in the urban area is significantly lower among the kids experiencing child hunger. So when I put all of that into a model to kind of understand how these assets and demands are working in families, in this urban environment and only comparing food insecure to very low food secure families, what we see is that negative life events and transportation costs really emerge. So let me explain transportation costs because it looks protective, right? I mean, the more you're spending on traveling, the less food insecurity you have. But that's because the costs here include the cost of insurance and the cost of a car payment. So the people with the highest transportation costs would be people with cars that they're making payments on. And so then it becomes really clear that what really makes the difference for these families is having a car, and a reliable car, probably. So we have families that have a lot of negative stuff going on. It happens to be the kind of negative stuff that all of us are going to experience in our lives, right? And so our responsibility to each other is to help figure out how we build social safety networks that protect children when families have negative things going on in their lives. And one of the things that families really need in this urban environment, where they may not have as much access to family and friends, they might be couch surfing to figure out where they live, is a reliable source of transportation. We really like our study for a lot of reasons. We have the biggest sample right now of very low food secure families and children. We have really good study recruitment. About 67% of the people that we asked to be part of our study agreed to be. We have good data quality because of the cleaning and management, and if you guys are interested in asking some questions of this data, there are lots of opportunities to do that. And we like our family adaptation framework because it helps us to understand both the assets and demands that food insecure families have. It is a cross-sectional design, so we would love to be able to follow families over time. And we still need to kind of disentangle what's happening with program participation in this sample. I'd like to acknowledge my several co-investigators. I don't know if you guys want to raise your hands. I see a couple of you in the room. Thanks. And our funders from the University of Kentucky and the many people who've helped us to design and think about this work. And, of course, our participants and community partners. Yeah, I just want to say I completely agree. Thank you. And I think we all should do something about that today. I went to see my senator a year ago and told him about these data and said, I think we need to start enforcing the minimum wage, $725 a month versus $500 a month. And he said back to me, well, I don't believe in the minimum wage. So we have a lot of work to do to ensure any kind of fair wage. Again, I really appreciate your point. We don't know from our data, but we've talked to our advocates in the state, and so the theory they've put forward to us is the way that people are enrolled in SNAP in our state is through a system called Benefits Bank. Are all of you familiar with Benefits Bank? So rather than having a professional intake worker at a social services office doing who knows all of the rules doing intake, we have a system of community volunteers and advocates taking in applications. And one of the things we think might be happening there is that they're not familiar with the dual household rules. So that people who are dealing with a lot of homelessness and living in other people's houses, all of those people that they're living with at the time might be getting counted, and that's causing their benefit level to be lower. I'll be here after if you think of some. Thanks.